Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2017 earnings conference call. At this time, I'd like to introduce Armando Tamez, Nemak CEO, Alberto Sada, CFO, and Adrian Althoff, Investor Relations Officer. Both here, they're all here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's investor relations website. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Adrian Althoff. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our fourth quarter financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we'll open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Adrian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2017 conference call. We saw an overall positive trend in demand for our components in the fourth quarter across the markets we serve. New program launches in our European operations dropped consolidated volumes 1.7% higher, with customer demand in North America and rest of world remaining stable. Revenues increased 9.8% due to higher aluminum volumes and aluminum prices. However, aluminum prices also increased on a sequential basis, which, as we have discussed in recent quarterly calls, represents a headwind for our results. EBITDA decreased 10.8% in the period, mainly due to the adverse impact of negative metal price lag, as well as higher launching expenses, particularly in North America. For the full year, EBITDA was affected by the same factors behind quarterly variations, finishing 10.4% lower than in 2016. Volumes decreased slightly compared to the previous year, as lower customer demand in North America narrowly outweighed growth in Europe and rest of world. Meanwhile, revenues increased 5.3%, driven by higher year-over-year aluminum prices. During the quarter, we continued to scale up production of our first seven programs in structural and electric vehicle components, while advancing with test production runs in three others. Our efforts to meet and exceed our customers' expectations for these programs enable us to generate approximately $100 million in revenues in structural and electric vehicle components for 2017, making it our first year with substantial revenues in the segment. We also secured new business that will enable us to provide higher value-added content to our customers in structural and electric vehicle components, while making further inroads in the implementation of our technology roadmap and our strategy. In particular, I would like to highlight two new programs which we obtained in the quarter. One, to produce structural components for electric applications of Volvo in China, marking our entry into that country's fast-growing EV market. And one, to provide just-in-time delivery of fully assembled structural components to both gasoline and battery electric vehicles for Daimler, representing a new milestone in our efforts to broaden our capabilities in high-value-added lightweighting solutions. With these wins, we increased the size of our total order book in structural and electric vehicle components to approximately $320 million in annual revenues. For the quarter and full year, we secured new contracts across our business lines worth a total of approximately $130 and $830 million in annual revenues, respectively. Building on our innovation track record, this past November, we were selected as a winner one of the world's most prestigious awards in research and development, the R&D 100 Awards. This recognition was based on their role in the development of a new class of superalloys that delivered vehicle lightweighting benefits superior to those of currently available alloys, underscoring our efforts to contribute towards a more sustainable automotive industry. In October, we were named as a finalist for the 2018 Automotive News PACE Awards for the development of our patented lightweight rotocast aluminum casting process, representing a proven cost-effective solution for casting high-performance engine blocks with extensive design flexibility. We see rotocast as a pillar of our powertrain business. Also, during the quarter, I am pleased to share that we received two important awards from customers in Asia, one for quality and performance from Chang'an Ford, and the other one for technology and innovation from Tata Motors. Lastly, on the financing front, this past January, we successfully placed a new 7-year, $500 million bond issuance at 4.75%. The proceeds from which will be used to prepay previous notes from the same amount due in 2023. We expect that the issuance will yield financial savings in the amount of $3.75 million per year. With that, I will hand off the call to Alberto Sada, NIMAC CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. Let me start by providing an overview of auto industry performance in our main regions to provide some context for our results in the quarter. Regarding North America, U.S. vehicle sales showed a 1.6% reduction year-on-year, consistent with expectations of industry analysts. Vehicle production declined 4.1% year-on-year in the region as OEMs adjusted production to reduce inventory levels towards historical averages. Meanwhile, in Europe, the market showed contrasting trends. Whereas vehicle sales declined 1.4% due to softness in Western Europe, production grew 7.9% year-on-year, with exports outside of the region accounting for a large share of the growth. Additionally, we saw an accelerating shift in vehicle sales mix, with customer demand driving a shift towards gasoline vehicles and away from diesels. We have seen diesel share of new light vehicle registration in Western Europe decline from 49% in December 16 to 42% in December 17. While on the one hand, we experienced a reduction in our diesel volumes this quarter, on the other hand, this effect was more than compensated by gasoline applications and new program launches. Our volumes were 12.0 million equivalent units, a 1.7% increase year-on-year, mainly due to new program launches in Europe. In turn, revenues were $1.1 billion, a year-on-year increase of 9.8% due to growth in volumes together with higher aluminum prices. We reported consolidated operating income of $66 million, 26.7% lower than the year-ago figure. This result was mainly due to the following two factors. First, rising aluminum prices resulted in a continuation of negative metal price lag. This effect was accentuated by recent increases in premiums on primary aluminum in North America, creating a divergence between our buying and selling indicators, which historically had been very closely correlated. The total impact of negative metal price lag for the quarter was around $11 million, two-thirds of which is explained by the divergence just mentioned. We are currently in discussions with our customers over pricing adjustments to account for this situation. And second, we incurred extraordinary manufacturing expenses associated with new program launches in North America. This included higher than expected labor and shipping expenses to meet customer production schedules. Given the progress we have made in these launches in recent weeks, we expect that these line items will normalize in the first half of 2018. Reflecting the reduction in operating income, EBITDA finished at $166 million, 10.8% lower than 4Q16. In turn, EBITDA margin and EBITDA per equivalent unit were also lower than a year ago. EBITDA margin was 15.2%, compared to 18.7% in 4Q16, and EBITDA per unit was 13.80, which compares to 15.80 a year ago. Despite the decrease in EBITDA, our free cash flow was $40 million better than the same period last year, which speaks well of our capacity to prudently manage outflows such as working capital and capital expenditures under challenging industry conditions. Net income amounted to $36 million, a 40% decline over 4Q16. The main factors were the reduction in operating income, which I already mentioned, plus foreign exchange fluctuation, in particular the effect of the appreciation of the euro against the dollar. Next, I would like to touch on our CapEx program. In 4Q17, we invested $109 million, adding capacity and revamping equipment across our regions and product lines to support new program launches. Now, let me cover our regional results. As mentioned before, the North American auto industry reported lower year-on-year figures for both sales and production as major OEMs reduced inventory levels. Despite the industry reduction just described, our volumes for the region remained stable on the back of new program launches. For Q17, North America revenues increased 7.5% year-on-year due to higher aluminum prices. EBITDA for the quarter was $92 million, 22.7% lower than last year. In addition to the metal price lag and launching expenses already mentioned, we saw lower year-over-year production at our operations in Mexico, where we have higher margins compared to other parts of the region. Turning to Europe, we reported 5.6% increase in volumes, supported by a strong overall market, as well as new program launches. On top of that, the appreciation of the euro against the U.S. dollar and higher aluminum prices allowed us to obtain a 19.4% increase in revenues. Altogether, these positive factors outweighed negative metal lag and increased launching expenses, driving EBITDA growth of 12.7% year-on-year. Our volume in the rest of the world was flat in 4Q17. We saw lower production in China, whereas Brazil recorded higher volumes on the back of new program launches. On a year-over-year basis, rest of the world volumes were flat, while revenues decreased 7.8% due to sales mix and exchange rate. Meanwhile, EBITDA remained unchanged at $12 million. I would now like to hand the call back to Armando for some additional remarks.
Thank you, Alberto. Before opening the call for questions, I would like to say a few words on our outlook for 2018. First, in line with the strategy update we provided in our Investor Day last September, we see 2018 as a transition year, marked by investments to strengthen our foundation for a strong growth over the medium to long term. We have been investing resources in both our powertrain business and our new structural and electric vehicle component business toward this end. And we will continue doing so to the extent it is needed to support our recently awarded contracts. In the short term, however, we also recognize there are key external factors related to our business. In particular, trends in aluminum prices and light vehicle production that may have an impact on our results. With this context in mind, our guidance for 2018 is as follows. For volume, we expect 50.1 million equivalent units, revenues of 4.5 billion, EBITDA of 700 million, and last, CapEx of 384 million. We reiterate that we see a strong potential for our business in emerging growth opportunities linked to vehicle lightweighting and electrification. We are committed to maintaining our leading position in our field so that we can capitalize on such opportunities in the coming years. With that, we will open the call for Q&A. Rob, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Christian Landy with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the call. Hi, Armando, Alberto, and Adrian. I believe that the biggest part of the EBITDA per equivalent unit impact was related to the metal lag. I had calculated that it was between 15 and 20 million in the quarter. This 11 million that you mentioned was just related to this divergence, right? So the total metal price lag impact, is it close to the figure I set, like 15 million?
Yes, hi, this is Alberto. No, actually, the total metal lag impact that we saw in the quarter was 11. That's both the normal metal lag, as we have described, and this particular divergence that we're starting to see in the last part of 2017. So it's both.
It's both. Okay. Any chance you, I mean, if this metal price lag impact, which is temporary, hadn't been there, any approximation of what EBITDA per equivalent unit you would have delivered in the quarter?
Well, certainly half of the effect on a global basis was the metal lag. So hadn't we had that metal lag effect, it would be half of the difference, which would be about $1 per piece.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Our next question is from Alexander Falco with HSBC Global Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. It's not really asset management, but we go with that. It's HSBC. I have two questions. First one on the guidance. Can you break down a little bit on your revenues, between regions? Where do you expect more strength? Europe, seems to close out the year very strongly. Just wanted to know if you guys see that with moving down a little bit. And the second question is regarding NAFTA negotiations. It seems like right now there's, the national content part of the negotiations are, you can almost write those off. Just wanted to know if that is the case, it's a regional content. What does change for you? Have you guys prepared any scenarios if that happens? Thank you.
Yes, Alex. Hi, this is Alberto. For the first part of the question, just to give you some colors, we normally don't give a guidance on a per-region basis, but I can tell you more or less how the general trends are happening on the region. For North America, I think we're continuing seeing the same trend. So going forward, we see for 2018 slightly lower volumes, however, a little bit of mix improvement as we see production, slightly higher production in Mexico versus what we experienced in 2017. Europe, we see slightly higher, and there we have two effects. On one side, we have the positive effects of the launching of structural components and some block programs, but also we're seeing a little bit of headwinds on the diesel side that we're eventually catching up, but that's more on the second half to the, for the next 18 months. And then the rest of the world, we continue seeing very positive developments, both in Asia and South America, where we're seeing Asia growing on the back of new program launches that we're developing, as well as a little bit of recovery in South America, as well as new program launches. So it's a mix, and I would say positive for Euro and RO, slightly negative for North America.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Alex, thank you. Go ahead.
Second part of your question related to NAFTA, let me just share what we have been, listening and watching from different fronts. We have close contacts to the Mexican negotiators, as well as close contact to some extent to some of the negotiations in the U.S. and Canadian markets. We are still confident that the three countries will reach an agreement. It is expected by March that the next meeting will be held in Mexico City. And Mexico is preparing some proposal, as we have indicated during the NIMAC Investor Day. Certainly, the U.S. put certain conditions or at least a proposal to increase local content. I think the Mexican authorities, in our opinion, are preparing something related to that to increase that additional content, but not to any particular country, but to the region. I think that will be put in on the table. We're still confident that it's beneficial for the three countries. And in the unlikely event that for some reason they will not be able to get an agreement, as we have presented in our Investors Day, only 20% of our total revenues are exported to the U.S. From Mexico. And our understanding is that the maximum duty that could be imposed on our parts will be 2.5%. And certainly, we will make sure that this expense, if it comes, we will ask our customers to take care of that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Luis Miranda with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, yes. Hi, good morning, Armando, Alberto, Adrián. A couple of questions. The first one is, Alberto, just following up on the extraordinary charges, you mentioned $11 million on the metal price lag. And can you give us an idea of the magnitude for the launching of the new programs? How much was the impact? The second question is with regards to the outlook in terms of the bidding process for new structural components and electric vehicle projects. As you were mentioning in the NEMAC Day, you mentioned you identified close to $500 million. I don't know if you could give us an update. How comfortable do you feel with that number? Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Luis. Related to your first question, the difference in EBITDA that we saw in the fourth quarter is basically twofold. So on one side, we discussed metal lag, and the other major, let's say, extraordinary expense we had was launching expenses, particularly in North America. These are accounted to about $9 million in the quarter, and mostly related to extraordinary manufacturing expenses, as I described before, a little bit more shipment expenses, et cetera. Those are, let's say, extraordinary expenses associated with the ramp-up of products that we see in primarily in North America.
Yeah. Luis, to answer the second question related to the pipeline that we see, as I have indicated during the NEMAC Investor Day, we're still working very closely with the customers. Just, again, talking to our the commercial team, as we speak, we are currently talking to 30 existing and new potential customers about opportunities on the EV side as well as structural components. We have estimated that we have between $500 to $600 million worth of potential additional business, and certainly since we are making good inroads not only in Europe but also in Asia, we are confident that we will continue getting new orders. And as soon as they come, certainly we will be updating our guidance in terms of new orders for structural as well as EV components.
Yeah, perfect. Just, Armando, just to follow up on this question is, do you think that these 30 potential customers is partially benefited by the change or the new structure the changes that you made in the structural component last year, is it helping? Are you seeing any benefits already?
Yes, absolutely. This is an industry that normally customers tend to be conservative, and they like to do business with companies that have already, let's say, proven to the market that they can produce and deliver these type of components. So right now, as we have indicated, we are, as we speak, producing seven new parts in different regions, mainly in Europe. I would say that 90% is in Europe. We're also producing parts in North America, and we will start producing parts in Asia very soon. And that certainly customers take a look and see how you're performing, and also they look at the potential in terms of technology and quality and so on. So those are some things that, in our opinion, will give us an advantage, and certainly we are looking to get additional new orders. And as we have indicated, we expect that this business will yield better profitability than our core business. Certainly, we will need to go to this learning curve in which we're trying to, again, learn as quickly as possible so that we can develop the higher efficiencies as well as get the best profitability that we can.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Can you comment on your plans regarding dividends for the year? Thank you.
Yes, hi, Gilberto. We will be proposing our dividend payment during our General Assembly meeting, which is scheduled late February. So that's when we will give, let's say, the approved amount. At this point, we cannot share our plans. We have to wait for the approval at the General Assembly. We expect a similar rationale as we had in the past of trying to provide free cash flow in excess of our CapEx as dividends.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Eric McKee with Lazard. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you for the call today. I think you partially answered my one question, but if you were to say, you know, structural components plus EV was at 90% Europe, that's the other question as well. Right, thanks.
At this point in time, yes, certainly European, because they have higher requirements in terms of emissions and CO2 reduction. Certainly, they are moving at a much faster pace than their counterparts in North America, as well as the counterparts in Asia. That's why we have more orders. We expect in Asia, as we have indicated before, that the government, Chinese government, will increase the requirements in terms of CO2 emissions, as well as fuel efficiency. And we believe that that will certainly create an opportunity for us as well. As everybody knows, the Chinese government has already indicated that they want to become the leading producer of electric vehicles in the world. So we estimate that that will be able, or we will be able to get new orders in that market as well. In North America, I think it's important also to say that as we speak, the administration of the U.S. is reviewing the numbers related to CAFE, or miles per gallon required. Those will be defined in March, and we will be, let's say, looking at those. And certainly, depending on the new regulations, our customers will have to play or adjust to these new requirements.
Thank you. And just, you know, secondly, just regarding metal price lag, I guess the results were different than I was expecting. I mean, if you look at COGS, I look at cash COGS per unit, it was actually down, quarter over quarter. But, you're suggesting metal price lag there. And then I also look at, ASPs or revenue per unit, however you want to call it, were actually down this quarter over quarter, and they were down quarter over quarter in 3Q as well. Is this just a massive mix factor, shipping lower quality products? And then, rest of the world, ASPs were down 27.5% quarter over quarter. I'm just trying to understand, is this just really big swings in types of products that you're selling, or what's leading to this?
Yes, Eric, this is Alberto. No, I think the what we saw in the rest of the world was a little bit of a combination of both mix and effects. What we're seeing there, I mean, it's relative terms, it's obviously less than on the consolidated basis, but there were some, let's say, mix changes, as we saw a little bit less volumes in China versus higher volumes in South America, and we have a totally different price structure. So that's the main reason why we have this fluctuation in the rest of the world. For the other regions, I have to check exactly ASP or the revenue per part. But generally, what we saw in North America was a little bit of a shift in mix as we were producing a little bit more volumes in the U.S. versus what we were producing in Mexico. And depending on the type of products, if it's blocks or heads or different products, they have different profitability. But in general, the EBITDA per unit will be lower in the U.S. versus what we have in Mexico. And the reason for that is essentially production schedules. There is no preference or no discretionary shipments or quality issues or anything like that. It's just how the production schedules are being laid out by our customers. But yeah, the primary adjustment on that is, as we said, this divergence, talking about Metalac, this divergence in indicators that I just explained, where we're seeing primary aluminum picking up dramatically, given speculation that we're seeing, in particular due to this Section 232 discussions at the Department of Commerce in the U.S., where they are thinking of imposing tariffs to both the steel and aluminum. So that's generating this imperfection in the market that is affecting a part of our cost and is not being translated to our revenue. So that explains a little bit of the COGS or revenue mismatch.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is there any sort of timing that you might expect North American margins to return, or is that what you would require your customers accepting to pass through some of these prices? It's not really a part of the existing agreements, or...
It is. I think the traditionally, the let's say, the whole indicators were completely in tandem, both from the basket of indicators with which we buy versus our selling. What we saw now is just for that portion of primary aluminum picking up, in particular in the U.S., we're seeing these premiums going up, and that's what we're discussing with our customers, to adjust the formulas to reflect better this divergence that we're seeing lately in 2017, so that we fully pass through the pricing as we have had in the past. Mm.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Juan Cabarrus with Citi. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, everyone. So my first question is just to get some clarification on your backlog for the structural components. You mentioned that you now have a backlog of $320 million on an annual basis. What's the time frame for us to see that materialize? Is this $320 million going to come in 2018? And then second, just kind of tied to that as well, just to understand your guidance for 2018, it looks very similar to what you delivered in 2017. So I'm curious, off of the comments you made that, North America looks like it's slightly lower but with a better mix, Europe is looking slightly better, and rest of the world is very positive. Why aren't we seeing any, growth in profitability? And maybe if you can share what's your kind of FX view or metal price view embedded in your guidance? Thank you.
Yeah. The first part, related to when do we expect to have the EVs and structural components at full production, it is going to be by 2020. We are ramping up our production. We're expecting this year, by the end of the year, to be at approximately between $150 to $170 million in revenues. And as I have indicated, we're ramping up the production of these components in different plants in Europe, North America, and we will start also in Asia. And we're confident that, again, we will be producing the $320 million by 2020. And as we have indicated, again, we're confident that we will continue getting new orders on both electrical as well as structural components.
And Juan, in connection to your second question around the guidance, yes, certainly our EBITDA for 2018, we're guiding it to be at very similar levels as what we had in 2017. And there is a mix of items that, have an effect in 2018. I think the primary item is volumes. And as we highlighted, the volumes are relatively stable with the effects that I just described, where we're seeing North America slightly lower, Europe is slightly higher there, with a little bit of mixed effects between growth and structural components and some negative effect on the diesel side, and relatively strong rest of the world operations. So So that's what we are incorporating. Volume is the main driver for our EBITDA. I think at the same time, we have a few tailwinds and headwinds. On one side, the metal lag situation is clearly a headwind. We also are assuming additional expenses associated with launching of structural components, and we're preparing to be ready to launch and capture significant volumes in the future. And for that reason, we're anticipating that we may end up having some extra expenses that we'll recover in the future with new business. I think also economics is a plus and minus. We're seeing a little bit better performance in the rest of the world, and also expect a little bit better performance and less launching expenses in North America. So the combination of everything that I just described essentially puts us at the level that we just guided for 2018. We'll certainly be reporting progress in the year.
Okay, thanks. And maybe if I may, just one more question, just on the back of the U.S. tax reform. I'm curious if you've seen any ways to, I guess, to see any benefits into 2018 or 2019, either on your CapEx deployment or on just incremental savings into the year, and anything to highlight there?
Yes. Actually, in the short term, there is no effect on our side, as we had NOLs and we had a relatively low cash tax basis. But midterm, long term, definitely we will see there some improvement, as we will see, obviously, a lower expected cash tax basis for U.S. operations.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Alejandro Azar with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my questions. Most of them have already been answered. Just a follow-up on the tax reform. Could you mention a possible impact, a possible benefit on the U.S. operations? And another one is, I couldn't quite hear the savings on the restructure of the bond. Could you repeat it, please?
Yes, the savings on the bond represent, we have, Alejandro, a 5.5% bond and we issue a new one at 475 for the same amount, $500 million. That will represent savings of about $3.75 million in financial cost per year.
Perfect. And related to the tax reform, did you saw any benefit during the end of the year? Are you seeing a benefit for 2018? What can you comment on that?
Yes, Alejandro. As it was indicated, on the short term, we're not seeing any change. We already enjoyed a very low effective cash tax rate in the U.S. because of historical NOLs that we had back since we did some acquisitions in the region. So we're still depleting those NOLs, and that's why in the short term we will see a direct benefit. Though we will definitely be able to see a little bit of positive benefit in the future as those NOLs exhaust and we move to the nominal tax rate in the U.S.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Alejandro Chabelas with Actimber. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. So my questions. Just a couple of clarifications. I'm still not quite clear on why average profitability per unit would remain at 2017 levels, given that metal lag was a significant part in this. I'm just trying to understand how much would launch expenses in particular affect profitability. Would this be the main driver, increased launch expenses in affecting profitability per unit? And the second one, if you could comment maybe on what do you expect the negotiation of the resolution regarding CAFE, regarding the fuel efficiency decision by CAFE that will be taken March 30. Do you expect upside from this decision for lightweighting, or is it more on the negative side for lightweighting? That would be all from my part. Thanks.
Yes, Alejandro, related to your first question related to profitability, I think, I mean, the comments that you're mentioning are correct. I mean, we had some extraordinary effects in 2017 associated with this meta lag as well as this launching expenses that we experienced, particularly in North America and earlier in the year in Europe. However, we're seeing in 2018 also additional expenses associated with our readiness to structural components. We're teaming up a big, let's say, an important team, particularly in Europe, to get ready to develop and sell and capture all those orders. So we'll have a little bit more of those expenses, though in 18 will be different than what we saw in 17 in terms of where those launching expenses happened. And again, this is in our sales preparing for this important growth that we're seeing and to be able to capture more orders for structural components and EVs. MetaLab for this year is still an unknown. So on that one, we still need to see where it goes.
Yeah. Alejandro, related to the second part of your question about regulations, as we have indicated during the NEMAC Investor Day, our customers are basically in three main regions, North America, Europe, and Asia. And our customers are facing a big dilemma because the three regions, they have three sets of different rules and regulations, and they are trying to define their strategy. I think it's important to remember that 60% of revenues come from North America. In the event, and most likely that will happen, is that the CAFE regulations will be reduced in North America, we see an opportunity by the following. Certainly, we will not see a significant increase in electric vehicles in North America. That certainly will imply that we will not grow in that segment, at least in this region. And that will mean that our customers will continue using their existing powertrains. For us, I think it's not bad. That will require for NEMAC less investment and use existing assets to produce and continue, let's say, producing our products, heads and blocks in the region. We see a totally different picture in Europe, where authorities are very strict in terms of regulations, as well as in China. So we will play it by ear, and certainly we will need to wait until it is official that the U.S. potentially may reduce their corporate average fuel efficiency in the region.
Perfect. Thanks a lot. Just a follow-up question. Would you say that guidance for the year is on the conservative side, or do you feel confident about the $700 million in EBITDA and in profitability per unit?
Yeah. This is our best view, Alejandro, of how do we see, let's say, the year. And certainly, if we see additional benefits, we will inform all the investors community at the proper time.
Correct. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Jose Vasquez with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. I have a question on in North America and production. Could you break down your exposure by type of vehicle? How much is to light trucks and how much is to light vehicles? Thank you.
Yes. Hi, Jose. I think in North America, we have, as you know, a relatively high share. So I don't think we have any additional concentration than normal. So we're exposed to all vehicle segments, from the passenger cars to the SUVs and CUVs within our customers, right? So there's a segment that we don't serve, in particular the Toyota and Honda markets. But everybody else, it's we're the largest suppliers of all of them, and our products go in all the different vehicle segments, from the very small engines that go in the small passenger cars to the very large engines that go in the pickup trucks and large SUVs. So it's our exposure is as diverse as the mix of cars and trucks that you see in North America. And if you recall, the market moving towards more the larger vehicles or the SUVs, CUVs. versus cars. And but that's, let's say, not because we're exposed to one particular one, but we are selling to all of them.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Chelsea Colon with TIAA. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I just have a couple of questions. You mentioned about $20 million impact from the combination of the metal price lag and the startup expenses. But what would make up the remaining $15 million or so that represents the gap between your guidance and the actual EBITDA achieved? And then my second question is also in terms of margins. I remember a couple years back now when you were expecting the structural components segment to grow much more rapidly. I think your target was more 2020. You're also talking about margins at the consolidated level about 18.5%, but it seems like they've kind of stabilized around the 15 to 16% level. So I'm wondering if you're still expecting to be able to increase margins in that way, maybe in on a more delayed basis, and what would be the drivers behind that, or if we should be expecting the 15 to 16% to be kind of the steady state for the future.
Yeah, sure, Chelsea. Thank you for your questions. Related to your first question about the gap between the implicit fourth quarter figure versus our guidance, the majority of the difference comes from a little bit less volumes that we had anticipated. We were expecting a more stronger quarter for the fourth quarter of 17, and this came as small reductions, or not small, but some reductions that we saw in volumes in Europe. Europe, had we not seen the diesel as a mix change into gasoline, we had had more volumes there that we had made up for most of the gap versus our guidance. So that's also incorporated in our 2018 figures. We're seeing this mix change. Though we're catching up gasoline variants, in some cases it takes a little bit of time for us to get those products. So that's the main reason for this gap that we saw, in addition to the metal lag and launching expenses that I just described.
Yeah. Chelsea, related to this, your second question, certainly under the new administration in the U.S., we saw a change immediately after President Trump took office. He immediately gave instructions for his team to review the CAFE regulations, and they say that they will take 1 year to review, talk to different parties to try to understand better if what the previous administration of President Obama set as targets. Just to remind you, under President Obama, they had a target of 54.5 miles per gallon to be reached by 2025. Based on that, we certainly had some expectations about how the structural component business, as well as electric vehicles, would penetrate the U.S. market. Last year, certainly, we acknowledged that and moved our target to reach the $1 billion in revenues for this new business by 2022. We're still confident that these figures could be reached by that time. Certainly, we will need to watch what is going to be the new regulations in the U.S. if they are the change. Related to margins, we're still confident, and that's the way that we are the quoting. Since there is no capacity in the industry, we're expecting to have a reasonable profitability, at least 200 basis points higher than our core business. But I think it's important to acknowledge that we have a learning curve. We will have, again, some efficiencies that we need to improve in our launching of new products. But yes, we are confident that we could reach those profitability levels once we stabilize and we get larger scale.
So at the consolidated level in 2022, what would the margin expectation be?
Yeah, we're expecting, again, to have basically about 17 or 18% profitability on those new products.
We expect certainly that by that time we will have created internally some efficiencies, and also that we will be able to price our products more competitively. But we are expecting at least 17-18% margin on those products by this 2021-22.
And just to complement, and I think to follow up on the margin question, if you see it on a per unit basis, you will see a gradual increase of those margins, because the percentage on sales has this metal effect that has increases or decreases the denominator. So we're expecting to land at about $16.50 to $17 per piece.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Valentin Mendoza with Benort. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is a follow-up question regarding your launching expenses. I was wondering if you could walk me through to understanding what had changed from the previous earnings call when you mentioned that you weren't expecting any further increasing launching expenses in the fourth quarter and nor in 2018. And now you are having this as a lagger in your profitability for 2018.
Yes, Valentin. Thanks for your question. Absolutely, the launching expenses are a result of multiple things. On one side is the let's say the ramp up of products, but at the same time, and that's we try to calculate what is the additional cost while we reach full capacity usage. But also, unfortunately, you see some changes happening on the demand of our customers that tend to drive higher, let's say, temporary cost or lower temporary cost, depending on those pools. And that may mean having to work 7 days a week to meet shorter or pull ahead of times, or increase in the ramp-up of volumes or changes in design, which also have a corresponding effect. So altogether, that generates additional labor expenses in terms of overtime, in terms of additional crews to work 7 days a week, and also in some cases we have to expedite shipments. By to be able to meet just-in-time deliveries. And we have a lot of work happening at our plants, particularly in Mexico, that drove those expenses higher in 2017 fourth quarter. And for 2018, we are seeing a slightly different additional expense, not more in the same fashion as what we had in fourth quarter, but more this additional expense to be ready to team up our efforts in structural components and EVs by increasing our group of people, the engineering staff, as well as some development expenses, new R&D projects that we're incurring to be able to tap better and gain more structural components and EVs. So most of the extra costs that we'll be experiencing in 18 will be associated with the activities geared towards future growth.
Thank you very much, Alberto.
Our next question is from Glenn Zahn with Commerce Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon. Question on your metal lag. Can you just explain a little bit how the mechanics work? I assume that you have language in your contracts with your customers. And if we see a price increase, I mean, what generally is the lag? Are we talking a one-month lag, a three-month lag?
Yes, Glenn. The metal lag is definitely, or let's say, let me put it differently. The formulas that we have on our prices, which are established in our contracts, they vary by customers, but in general, they have a two to three month metal lag, depending on the region and the customer. So that means that we're selling with the prices of the last 2 months or 3 months now, and we're buying, given the nature of the market, most of our cost in spot basis. So that generates, when the metal goes up, that generates a negative effect on a temporary basis. And when the metal goes down, it generates the different effect. And I think in the fourth quarter of 2017, we saw something slightly different than that. And that's why we said that we are talking with our customers to adjust those pricings, because we saw divergence in some of the indicators that we use to buy materials versus the indicators we have to sell. Traditionally, these indicators have been fully correlated, and for that reason, the full pass-through effect was materializing. But given this special situation with a speculation around potential legislation changes in the U.S. around aluminum trade, import duties, potentially, that has generated an increase in premiums for primary aluminum in the U.S., totally different than what we have seen on the secondary market, and this divergence is creating this additional gap we saw in the fourth quarter. So this is the one that we need to adjust on our contracts with our customers to make sure that we have full pass-through as we have had in the past.
Yeah, and it looks like prices are off going into January, so we're not going to see any lag effect going in. If things continue at this trend, we shouldn't see any, of course, any lag effect in the first quarter.
Well, it will be hard to see. We saw a little bit of uptick in prices in December and January, coming a little bit down on the last couple of weeks, but who knows? We saw also similar effects on September, October timeframe, but then picked up. So, unfortunately, this is a market situation, and we'll have to continue monitoring development. And we trust we're going to be able to come to a resolution with our customers to fix this.
Okay. And then now you talked about these extra costs that you're going to get in 2018. I think you mentioned them, like revamping costs, a little bit different from the launch expense you had last year. But can you just quantify them? Are they in the same level as last year, or are they going to be significantly more?
Well, no, not significantly more. No, probably around the same level as we saw last year. But again, this is more additional costs we're incurring for developing structural components and setting up the organization, the engineering team, product development, et cetera, to tap fully that market. As the potentially the orders could come up well higher in 2018, we do need to have, we're getting ready to have all the resources available. So that's taking extra costs that we will eventually recover with sales and ramping of new products in the following years. But on order of magnitude, those should be more or less equivalent, but they are different in nature.
And now you mentioned that there's going to be a meeting in Mexico City with NAFTA, et cetera. They might slap an extra duty on to tariff on you. But you're confident that you can. And what makes you so confident that you can pass that on to your customers? And also, too, you do have, I believe, production facilities in the U.S. How much can you mitigate any tariff effect by ramping up production in the States?
Yeah. Well, I think let me just clarify, Glenn, that they will have the seventh meeting between U.S., Canada, and Mexico in March to continue negotiations with the free trade agreement or the NAFTA. And I am not saying that they will solve this issue. What we have heard from the Mexican side is that Mexico is preparing a proposal, especially on the auto sector, related to local content. This is something that the Mexican government is going to present. And certainly, we cannot assure that they will come to an agreement. Related to the second point, and in the unlikely event that they walk away from the free trade agreement and that they will have to go for the WTO rules, the maximum duty that our parts could pay is 2.5% of the parts that we produce in Mexico and are shipped directly to the U.S. In our contracts, we have a very clear statement that our customers know our cost structure very well. And certainly, if an additional cost will come for us, we will have to pass that cost to our customers. I'm not saying that we have already negotiated those, because first, we have not seen yet any change in that regard, but certainly that will be our position.
Okay, great. And just one final question. You mentioned a little bit of a shock that you had with the in Europe with movement to away from diesel to gas. Is that the fact that little shock to volumes that you had, is that drifting into Q1, or is that just a prior, have you recovered that?
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good question, and I'd like to clarify on that. Certainly, after the Volkswagen diesel scandal that happened a couple of years ago, we have seen a shift in Europe that the market is moving from diesel to gasoline. Last year, it went from about 48% to 42%. So we saw that reduction. We have in Europe flexibility to move from diesel to gasoline. We have plans that takes a little bit of time to make the necessary adjustments. What we are seeing is that, for instance, the reduction that we have already experienced on diesel applications, some of our customers have already been awarded NEMAC with some products for gasoline, either heads and blocks, but it takes a little bit of time. We will see, in our opinion, an additional reduction in diesel applications, and certainly we are expecting that we will gain, let's say, what we are losing in diesel through gasoline, but certainly that would have some type of lag in which we will need to make some adjustment to our production facilities.
Okay, naturally, that's all embedded in your 51 million volume guidance for 18, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Alexander Falca with HSBC Global Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Two questions on the guidance. One, you know, how much you're accounting for structural components in the guidance when you talk about revenues? And the second is, you know, seems like it's a very soft number that you guys are providing in terms of, you know, EBITDA and the profitability. Just wanted to know how much of the effect of the metal lag are you guys putting into this thing, and what's the upside to this number? Thank you.
Yeah, related to the structural components and EVs, there we expect 2018 for us to be halfway of the 320. So we expect more or less revenues around $150 million for the year. And as we said, the ramping up is happening as we speak, and some others will happen in 2019. But we are, let's say, most likely halfway in 2018. And Alex, can you repeat your second part of the question?
No, the second part is on you know, seems like you guys took a very conservative stance on the EBITDA numbers. Whatever you look at it, are you guys factoring the metal lag here in the guidance? And you know, what's the upside to this number?
Yeah, Alex, that's a good question. Certainly, as I indicated, we are providing all of you our best view on how do we see the year. Certainly, as a management team, we will do best efforts to improve in every single item that we can. But at this point in time, that is our guidance, and I think we would like to build also credibility.
Okay, perfect. But you know, can you just if I may insist on this point specifically, you know, I'm assuming that you're having a fairly negative view on the effects of aluminum prices for 2018, right?
Well, I mean, we saw what happened in 2017, so there's a lot of speculation yet, so it's hard to put a number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Understood. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our next question comes from Eric McKee with Lazard. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Could you tell us, you know, how many million equivalent units you sold in EV plus structural components last year and maybe expected this year? And also, you had very high interest expense in 4Q. Is that sort of a one-off, or what are you expected to spend in interest expense going forward?
Yeah, related to the structural components, let me put it in revenue-wise. We had about $100 million of structural component sales in 2017. And as we highlighted, 2018, we should be around 150, so halfway through. So there's already activity on structural components in 17, though it's obviously on the nascent phase still. Most of that happened in Europe and a little bit launching in North America with the Q5 for Audi. And then Sorry, can you repeat your second question?
You can't give us
unit
sales for...
Sorry, I didn't write that question here. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's an extraordinary effect. That's a combination of two things. On one side, we had certain leases, financial leases, that we had to move on to, and classified as certain leases that were classified as financial leases that had an effect in the fourth quarter. That was most of it was a yearly effect that was associated to that. The second one is we had a little bit of extra interest expenses associated with the Eurobond as we repaid a little bit of the syndicated loans earlier in 2017 with this Euro-denominated loan. And as we have seen, the Euro appreciated, plus a little bit higher interest expense than what we had before. That accounts for the effect.
Okay,
we should see the interest expense normalizing in 2018.
Okay. You can't give us any volume information on structural components and EV?
Well, volume-wise, I think since it's a different nature, we're not providing that number directly. I think for now, I think it's better to use revenue as a reference.
Okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Althoff for any additional or concluding remarks. Sir?
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good day.
This concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation and have a great day.